From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison's office Wednesday upgraded charges against the former Minneapolis police officer who knelt on George Floyd's neck and charged the other three officers at the scene with aiding and abetting murder. The new charges came just 2 days after Governor Tim Walz asked Ellison to take over the prosecution in the killing of George Floyd. The unrest that's followed in the wake of the killing comes almost 6 years after the so-called Ferguson uprisings, which began in August of 2014 after the fatal shooting of Michael Brown by police officer Darren Wilson. Has anything changed in the interim? Are there prospects for change in sight today? For more on that, we spoke with Du Boisian scholar Professor Tony Montero via Skype from Philadelphia on Thursday.
Here we go again. Police killings triggering huge reaction. Travels across the country. People are pointing fingers. This wouldn't happen without the Russians. We heard that stuff even back in the 1930s. That's one of the things we've heard. Another is that this is a fake game by white nationalists who somehow have been able to pose as the Black Lives Matter people and light things on fire to blame them. Then there's also Antifa. This is apparently President Trump's favorite. It's their fault. So really, someone watching this from television without the benefit of history and paying attention to a whole lot of other things that have been going on for many years, the first question has to be, what are we actually looking at? And now, you know, in the context of this whole the wholesale loss of legitimacy for almost every institution, one after another, after another, after another. You know, to have this kind of chaos going on as we enter into the summer and the presidential election and coming out of this lockdown and everything else, you know, what are we supposed to be doing while this happens? Are we seeing a disintegration of the existing order happening, or are we seeing it being suggested as a possibility on the agenda? And are we ready for that? What happens if this society collapses and we don't have, people ready to step in and say, okay, this is what we have to do? And is anybody, who's working on that? Those are big questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are the big questions. And I don't have the answers. But one thing for certain is that the society going forward will never be what it was. Narrative of the ruling elites is that Trump is the devil incarnate, that all of the problems of the society, especially democracy, and I'm using their language, and the threat to it are associated with his presidency. This kind of oversimplification is done to distort the real essence of the problems and contradictions of the society. We had begun to talk about this, when I say we, you and I in particular, Don, and to a certain extent, I've had conversations publicly with Glenn Ford on this. Mm-hmm. And in the free school, we've tried to explore these matters, that this is a total crisis. I am very cautious in speculating about easy returns to what was. And I even am very cautious about my attitude and approaches to mass movements, especially ones that seem to be completely spontaneous. So having said all of that, I think the core of the crisis, at least in the public manifestation, is the crisis of politics, the delegitimization of most of the major institutions of the society. Most people be they on what is called in liberal discourse, the left or the right, distrust and do not see as legitimate any of the major institutions. So at a certain level, elites are fighting for legitimation. They're fighting to be legitimate. That is why you see so many of them jumping on the bandwagon of these mass protests that are going on around the country, because they're seeking legitimacy. But I don't think that's enough, because the legitimacy crisis is a systemic crisis. It is not a matter of this politician or this academic or the other journalist or this or the other general or even police chief in a major city. It is a matter of the institutions of society, the institutions of the state, the foundation of the political order itself. The disintegration is not something that happens in and of itself. It happens when people begin to think and act outside of the framework established by the strategic elites, those elites that define the order, the political, social, economic order, and are responsible for upholding it. I think all of that is in crisis. Where do we go from here? It is yet to be determined. The nation is deeply divided. The great protest demonstrations, and they are significant, more for what they tell us about potentiality than what they are themselves at this point. But even in spite of that, the nation is deeply divided, because there are millions of people who are not a part of these demonstrations, do not share the sentiments of these demonstrations, and such. So here we are. Where do we go from here is another question.
Yeah. There's so many facets to this that I guess we'll start with something we've been discussing for four years now, really. The crisis of legitimacy that was sort of manifest in the rise of Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries in 2016, of Trump in 2016 in the Republican primaries, and ultimately in the outcome of the election, and the fact that in 2016 and 2015, Black Lives Matter people were in the streets like this now. That banner was raised. In fact, it was created during the last few years of the Obama administration. In 2014, in 2014, you had Michael Brown. You know, how many, Troy, you had so many people that one after another, and nothing. And so people were in the streets over that. So voters did not buy into essentially the institutions that had been, you know, been running for at least the last 40, 50 years. People were in the streets showing they weren't going to tolerate something that has been going on, you know, how far back do you want to go? 1619 or, you know, Emmett Till or, you know, wherever that had been going on forever. You know, suddenly you had uprisings popping off that hadn't happened in 50 years. The institutions themselves started to cannibalize each other. You know, all right, we had the Occupy in 2011. You had the people in the streets in Seattle and elsewhere, the WTO and the other international architecture of trade and such. All of that was, you know, falling out of favor. All of the institutions that have any impact on people, the media, they poll in low numbers, Congress, single-digit favorabilities, contradictions throughout the system, like single-digit favorability in Congress and yet a 98% reelection rate. The people, they don't take any of this stuff seriously except for the fact that their lives are becoming untenable and these are the only places that they thought they could look to, and they find that they can't look to it, and yet the situation is becoming untenable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. And you were mentioning 50 years and 40 years. I think the cycle that we're talking about is a 75-year one at this point. It is the end of World War II, the rise of American hegemony, right. Dollar hegemony,
right.
U.S. military hegemony, and thus the U.S. becoming, in ways never imagined by anybody at the time of the founding or the Civil War or Reconstruction, the United States becoming an empire with 800, maybe more, military bases all around the world and armed with the most sophisticated and lethal weapons. On top of that, we have to consider the evolution of the U.S. state. And by the state, we're not talking about the government solely. The government is an agency of the state. We're talking about that set of institutions that are legally have the right to use lethal force in the interest of preserving the existing order. And that is the use of lethal force, not just against so-called foreign enemies, but domestic enemies.
Right.
We've had examples of that throughout these 75 years. McCarthyism and the anti-communist witch hunts, which meant not just communists. COINTELPRO, the rise in the last 20 years of the national security state and the surveillance of American citizens. The American state, which employs directly in its service almost 30 million people, is the most powerful, sophisticated state, in my opinion, to ever have been created. This is something beyond, first of all, the knowledge, but the imagination of most people that even study these things.
Yeah.
It is, this being the case, the crisis of the political order, as it is now being manifested, is in many ways a crisis of the state. The other way of looking at this, the constitutional crisis that in many ways has been brought about or brought on by the Trump presidency and his manner of governance, the constitutional crisis. We've been in the throes of something like this for a long time. Watergate kind of was a part of that. The wars in Iraq and so on, the first and second wars in Iraq and warfare powers to the presidency that it was never intended to have. All of these right. represent constitutional crises or the reconfiguration through decisions, court decisions, and so on, of what the Constitution is about anyway. So I think we're in a crisis of the state. How this will play out is anybody's guess at this point. But when at least three top generals come out in the last few days criticizing the president of the United States, thereby involving themselves directly in politics, when that happens, we are looking at really what I call a crisis of the state. How this crisis will be resolved is a whole nother issue. And we can get to that next if you want to. Because I think if we can pinpoint the fundamental question of this moment in the state, I think we can better understand the architecture of the crisis itself.
You know, let me ask you, do you think that there's like a coup that's, you know, we've discussed it, and I think we both agree that there's been a slow-moving coup that's been attempted, or, you know, various pushes in that direction since even before Trump took office after the election. But do you think now that, you know, seeing, for example, those three coming out, Mattis and company coming out in the latest role, with everything else that's going on, with all of the media ridiculously blaming Trump wherever they can for the COVID deaths and everything, and the sun failing to rise on time, do you think that that we're getting close to a position where they're going to attempt an overtly attempt a coup?
Yes, I do. And I think for most Americans, that's something that happened somewhere else. I think we're going to see, or we should, if we look at this thing properly, this is a coup being attempted. I don't think it's a fabricated news story that Trump did go into this secure place in the White House. There was probably something going on in the White House that was detected by his security people, and they wanted him in a secure place. I think definitely, and especially if you look at recent articles, you know, in particular, the Atlantic Monthly, or as they call it now, the Atlantic, is kind of the ideological center of a lot of this speculation and plotting. And what they're saying is that Trump is an existential threat to democracy. Well, yeah, you hear that one before.
Yeah.
That's what they have accused in the past communists of being.
Right.
And they've accused Trump of being an agent of a foreign government, Russia. Well, that's what they charge the communists with being. So if you have a president who are all of those things, and you have an election coming up in 6 months with a very, very weak opposition as a challenger, you would have to consider that the powers that be would be considering drastic measures, including a coup d'etat. In fact, there was an op-ed piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer early this week, I think Monday, where the writer said that we have to get Trump out of office even before the election. There was a similar a piece in the online journal called Common Dreams. And then if you read former Marine Corps General, John Allen's piece in Foreign Policy, I read it today, where he literally says that Trump is an existential threat to democracy, and he wants to rule by dictatorial means.
Jesus.
If, you know, you could argue, well, that's hyperbole, but it's not hyperbole. It is the ideological framing of a justification for a coup d'etat.
Right. Right. I mean, it's actually, you know, you're reading it somewhere. It's a public call for it, in essence.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And then you get on specific shows on cable. MSNBC is probably the most virulently anti-Trump network. And Morning Joe is probably the most ideologically clear of the anti-Trump forces, and clearly the most sophisticated with their guests and so on.
I'm looking at the last couple of days. I don't know, somebody must have broken one of the locks on the gates of hell, but George W. Bush is out and about as a hero of the people for calling Trump names. This is the guy who literally is responsible for the deaths of millions of people in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. Millions. Yes.
Yeah. But of course, killing Iraqis or Iraqis or Syrians or Venezuelans or anybody else in the third world, as it's often called, is not a threat to democracy. It is a way of, quote, spreading democracy.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, this crisis, let me put it this way, this crisis in some ways is unprecedented for this country. And it is a crisis of the state. It is a crisis of disintegration. It is a crisis from which the nation will have a very difficult time to recover from. Now, this is on top of what everybody is now admitting is a jobs depression. The stock market is doing relatively well, but the masses of people are suffering. 25% unemployment, generally over 50% among African Americans. Can the economy recover? If the economy can't recover quickly, that means the crisis of legitimacy deepens even further, which then means that the crisis of the state, because the people withdraw from what, you know, political theorists call the social contract, the contract between the rulers and the ruled. This is another way of saying the ruling class cannot rule in the old way.
Right.
And the people refuse to be ruled in the old way. Then what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah. And they can't rule in the old way. It's not,
well, that's
being,
true.
It's not
that's
functioning.
Right. That's right. And see, the mass protests demonstrate potentiality rather than an actual movement towards a radical reconfiguration.
Right.
It's not, that's not what these demonstrations are about.
Right.
And they can't be about. I wouldn't put that on them. It's spontaneous. It's highly organized by nonprofits and liberal left kinds of organizations, and of course the media. So it is limited in what it can do. It's limited in how long it can sustain itself. However, it does show potentiality. And going forward, that potential must be actualized in a genuine movement for democratic change. For democratic change, recognizing that the threat to democracy is not in the White House as much as it is in the institutions of the state, the institutions that run the economy, the institutions that run the media or the media. These are the pillars of dictatorship, and they've been with us in one or another form for 75 years.
That's right. And the immediate insult, you know, the immediate provoking act to this uprising, rolling uprising, whatever we're seeing, this unrest, is an exercise of the police power that is not recognized as legitimate by anyone, really. Looking at the totally, a guy sitting with his knee on a still person for 9 minutes on camera, unambiguous what's going on there. There's almost no one that can come up with a public excuse to the charge, this guy is murdering that guy, and this is like another lesson, basically, for the American
But you know something that's very interesting? I want to just talk about that because, you know, today is the memorial in Houston, Texas, for George Floyd, a man whose name will go down in history. But, you know, they now upgraded the charge against the cop that had his knee on his neck to second degree murder. The lawyers representing George Floyd's family said they believed it should have been taken up to first degree murder. Part of the hesitancy, it seems to me, of the attorney general out there in Minnesota is that they don't believe they can find a jury that will convict him of first degree murder, maybe even of second degree murder. Well, I'm not convinced of that in the atmosphere that has come into existence. I think where Mike Brown's killer got off, where Trayvon Martin's killer got off, where all of the killers of people like Eric Garner, they get off. I think there is a difference in the atmospherics. And it's not all just because of good intentions. It's also because, and I think this is where the crisis of legitimacy comes into play. If they let the cops that killed George Floyd off, the whole legal, political, police system will be held as illegitimate by growing millions of people.
Right.
I think there's a mass upsurge that these guys have to be convicted and have to do long, serious time. That's one thing. The other side of this is the consciousness of the people. And here, I think we have a longer way to go. I think different segments, and this is where this segmented and divided society is so important. The young people, the young liberals, the young radicals, the young socialists are viewed by especially the white working class as threats to their well-being, to the system that they have lived in and to a certain extent thrived in or done well in for so long. They are associated, that is the young marchers and protesters, are associated with the elites that have made life for white working people so bad. That's why they vote for Donald Trump.
Right.
Now, but on the other side, the young white marchers who tend to come from educated, middle class, upper middle class, urban backgrounds, they tend to look upon the white working class as backward, even fascist and racist. Yeah. So you have this segmentation. Each position is completely wrong about the other.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But then you have the what, you know, what in Aristotle's language you would call the excluded middle, mm-hmm. and that's the black community.
Right.
Who have over historical time provided moral, political, and intellectual leadership for the American people.
And in a situation like this, they're the ones that have, you know, they're the ones whose bodies are strewn everywhere. And so,
true that, in terms of being ignored,
we're out of time, so we're going to have to pick this up next week. But, certainly if someone's going to be left out of the conversation, and no one should, this is a problem that has to be solved. If any of the problems are going to be solved, this is the one that has to be solved.
Yes,
but the people who have been most victimized should be at the forefront of those raising questions and not being marginalized again while this is being hashed out by others.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much, Professor Montero. We'll speak with you again next week.
Thanks, Don. Take care.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.